Welcome to the Carbon Mini-Series within the Exploring Opportunities podcast, brought to you as part of the Future Farm Resilience Support delivered by NIAB, AKC and Savills working in partnership. My name's Elizabeth Stockdale, Head of the Farming Systems Team in NIAB. And today we're going to explore practical tips for reducing farm carbon footprint in arable systems with my guest, who is Kieran Valance from Savills. Hiya, Kieran.
Hi, Elizabeth.
My background, Kieran, is a soil scientist and farming systems researcher, you know, one of those annoying academics, and I dominantly work in arable systems. So I'm really pleased that today I'm talking to a practical farm business consultant who can think with us around those really practical tips and issues around reducing carbon footprints in arable systems. But before we get into some of those details of energy and fertilizer and sources of emission on farm, do you want to just introduce yourselves to folk who are listening, give us a bit of introduction to your background and why you're doing the job you do?
Yeah, sure. So my background is in farm management. I started my career straight after university as an assistant farm manager on an arable and beef farm. I worked through a farm management career roughly almost 10 years, latterly sort of specialising in combinable arable energy and other types of niche crops. I now work as a farm consultant at Savills for the last 2 years, based in and around the Cotswolds, but do work further afield. And I mostly provide management-focused consultancy work to arable and sheep businesses.
Excellent. So we are reflecting today on arable systems, greenhouse gases. I know you've been doing some work with some of your clients thinking about carbon footprinting. From that work, not anybody's in particular, but what are you noticing about those footprints from arable systems? What the key issues are and what stands out to you?
As a company, we've probably undertaken hundreds of carbon reports now for various different businesses across the country. So we have quite good data to enable us to pick out general trends. I would say probably the top three general trends for overall carbon footprints being the main emissions would be inputs, especially from fertilizer. The second, emissions from crop residues. And then thirdly, the fuels.
Okay. And thinking of that footprint as a whole, are you seeing that perhaps some arable farms have greater opportunities or more of that carbon sequestration or storage going on?
I think it depends on where we're drawing the sort of scope, what elements of the farms or necessarily the estates we're looking at. Are we including things like woodland, hedgerows that obviously have a great big factor in sequestering carbon? So the scope of these assessments is definitely paramount to compare across the board.
Yeah, and I think in arable systems, people often, I'm a soil scientist, so of course I'm going to say this and ask this question, that the soil might have quite good potential as a carbon store. Are you seeing people doing things that are really bringing that to play in their systems?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. Training your soil to a point where you're perhaps increasing soil organic matter to enable carbon storage is something that people are more conscious of now than they have been before. It is a slow process, as we all know, and there's benefits which I'm sure we'll probably come to talk about a bit later.
Yeah, okay. So we've got that idea of that we've got emissions to think about that we might reduce, but we also potentially have those stocks and stores that we could increase. So I guess arable farmers are in a relatively unique position compared to perhaps to energy companies or us in our own homes, of being able to be not just sources or problems in terms of greenhouse gases, but potentially also part of the solution.
Absolutely. We're very fortunate that we have these sequestering properties to our businesses.
Cool. So should we kind of think about some of those emissions and what your top tips are? You said fertilizer and nitrogen fertilizer, particularly, I think you said inputs, but I'm guessing we mainly mean that nitrogen fertilizer coming onto the farm is a big source of our greenhouse gas emissions. I'm sure there's someone out there saying, well, why don't we just stop using it then? What would your response to that be?
I think it's probably not as simple as just ruling out nitrogen fertilizer completely. Cereal production, what we're talking about here, is a large contributor to world food production. And it's probably an area that people could write theses on. But just thinking about something that Dimbleby wrote in 2021, we're producing 1.7 times the amount of food as of 1960 on a third of the amount of land area. And I have no doubt that nitrogen would have a big role in this statistic. I think we look at nitrogen because it has a direct yield response, and often farming businesses rely on yield to generate revenue, which ultimately keeps them buoyant. Look into nitrogen. The carbon footprint of nitrogen is made up mostly during the manufacturing process. So there is an element for farms to think about. Are there other organic forms of nitrogen that they could use as part of their fertilising strategy?
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to see, aren't we, more and more, at least information to help farmers and perhaps wider supply chains think about those different sources and forms of nitrogen and how they've been manufactured. That's not going to be something a farmer has necessarily direct control over, apart from obviously when they shop for fertiliser and make those decisions. It might, it isn't at the moment, it might become a factor in farm decision making.
It might, yeah.
And I think at the moment we know those are probably going to be more costly. So the decision, if we were only making it on a cost basis, is going to be no way for me. But actually maybe, I mean, I'm certainly aware of some work in some supply chains where actually the end user is thinking about subsidising some of these lower carbon products for farmers in their supply chains because they consider it to be so valuable that they're adopted.
Definitely. And we're seeing that supply chain pressure coming through now. And there are companies buying grains and oil seeds with a lower carbon footprint than and paying a premium for it.
So I guess it's also said sometimes that just being more efficient, you know, more grain per unit nitrogen used is actually the thing to focus on, not just how much nitrogen we use, being really efficient with that nitrogen when we do use it. Do you think that's the best way to think about use of any input, but particularly in the context of greenhouse gas emissions, our use of nitrogen fertiliser, sort of optimising its use in the system rather than taking it out altogether?
There is an element of applying the right amount of fertiliser to the right crops at the right time. And technology is helping us on farm to get to a position where we're able to make those decisions on farm without sending tissue samples off that might take a week to come back. The latest SFI scheme has payments to help farms with variable rate applications and to understand the need for crops when they're growing, and that could be used to support businesses.
And I'm guessing it might also just be around thinking about, well, that corner, looking at the yield maps rather than just thinking, but that corner of the field never yields well, whereas that one actually always seems to do really well, and actually almost just being able to adjust a strategy or an expectation so that we don't manage the whole field the same, even if we know that 50% of it's got a much lower yield potential than the other half. So we don't have to be really clever, do we? We just have to use the information that we've got on farm.
Yeah, and to review the rotations of crops and to look to see, you know, ways of including legumes perhaps in a rotation.
And so you mentioned legumes because of their role in they have lower nitrogen demand because they fix that nitrogen from the atmosphere to feed their own nitrogen, but then kind of push it through the rotation in their residues. I guess there must be downsides around all of those sorts of aspects and the crop choice. So are legumes a really good fit at the moment in rotations?
I think the most notable downside to legumes in rotation is probably the margin, because the markets for legumes are particularly fickle. You know, when choosing legumes in a rotation, there's a real consideration to think about the wider rotation. Beans and peas particularly only like to be grown roughly in 1 in 5 years. They don't really like growing next to each other, which is probably why they can't be closer together in a rotation. Legumes in grassland are brilliant at making more nitrogen available for the following crop. But the limitation of that would be finding an outlet for grassland with legumes in. It's great if you've got a mixed farming system and you can finish lambs or perhaps feed baled silage to cattle, but not every arable farming business have this opportunity as an outlet.
I guess some of the SFI options might be partly a nod to that better integration of legumes, things like the legume fallows and so on, and thinking about those as alternative break crops in rotations.
Yeah, I think especially over the past year, we've seen more farms uptake legume fallow type crops as part of their SFI schemes. And providing they're managed well, they're definitely part of the strategy to reduce nitrogen on the whole over a cropping rotation.
I guess when we started off, Kieran, you mentioned that, that crop residues might be quite an important source of emissions in the context of the footprint. And, we've just mentioned sort of cycling nitrogen through peas and beans and their residues and from grass clover lays being really important in supplying nitrogen in the rotation. Do you want to just comment on what you're seeing in footprints around crop residues. What is it that, is it more residues add more problem, or is it more balanced than that?
So I think the farms that have increased area of cover crops and more crop residues do emit more nitrous oxide.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing bad things for their carbon footprint, because whilst those crops are growing, they are taking nitrogen from the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So that might not be the factor that's influencing farmers to grow cover crops or not.
So if a farmer was to see, oh, I've made that change in management, but oh, I can see that spike up on my carbon footprint because I've done it, you're saying don't worry too much about that. That shouldn't be the driving factor to your decision.
Yeah, because by implementing those sorts of practices like growing cover crops, you're improving soil health. And we touched on it earlier, but soil has an opportunity to store carbon. And if you improve the soil health, you will ultimately be able to store more carbon.
For anyone who wants to follow up, we've got podcasts both on that, storing soil carbon and the organic matter cycling in soils with Dr. Pete Smith. And if you want to really hurt your head and think a bit about those N2O emissions, Dr. Nick Cowan from UKCH is also on one of the earlier podcasts talking about how that might work. So both of us can follow up later to understand that science a bit better. If we want to, so can the people listening. So let's get back to our carbon footprint. We've thought about nitrogen fertilizer and we've touched on residues and their role. The other thing you mentioned was fuel. Often the main use of fuel on farm is tillage for seed bed preparation and weed control and other feed operations like sprays and so on. I guess it's just as simple as how much fuel you use literally increases your carbon footprint.
Yeah, essentially, that is exactly it. The more fuel you use, the more emissions you will have. You could directly look at that and say, well, I think let's start practicing direct drilling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my experience, I've seen farms that perhaps have adapted that extreme change in farming policy in year one. We need to completely cut fuel usage, therefore let's direct drill everything, whilst overlooking the basics of soil structure, which is key to essentially any successful crop. So whilst that it looks good to reduce the fuel, you mustn't overlook the basics of producing good seed beds to produce crops.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it in the context of nitrogen, didn't we? It's not so much about taking it out, but also about just optimising use. So that sort of focus on using just the right amount in the right place at the right time, I think must apply just as much to fuel as it does to fertiliser. It's really just about judging what's needed.
Yeah, absolutely is. And judging what each field needs is probably a really practical way of looking at it.
So I guess reducing costs while maintaining production, so reducing costs of fertiliser and fuel, will also be good for margin on farm as well. So it must come with a bit more thinking time needed, but not any other major downsides, I don't think.
Exactly, yeah.
So just to kind of finish ourselves off, you talked about it depends where we draw the boundaries in terms of those carbon stores on farm. If a farm has got some land that's not very productive or some land that they're thinking about actually how to use it well, is that an opportunity to put woodland onto the farm? Is that something you are looking at with clients?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're sort of taking the approach of briefly touched on identifying those underperforming areas of the farm. Mm-hmm. And you can look at sort of geospatial areas that would suit woodland creation. And you mustn't overlook the current grants available for woodland creation, mm-hmm. because they're currently quite favourable. But going back to the three rights that we've been discussing, it's the right tree in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. And of course, some farms will have trees, very small ones, but nonetheless trees and trees in hedgerows as well as the hedgerows themselves already as part of the farm. Those I think must be quite a significant potential carbon store on farm. And of course, again, it's where SFI are helping us think about improving our hedgerow management as well, aren't they?
They are. I've kind of thought about hedgerows, you know, they're a real tangible feature of a carbon store, and the SFI option, one of the hedgerow options allows you to undertake a hedgerow condition assessment, which could identify those areas of hedgerows that you could gap up, plant trees in, or even create new hedgerows.
Yeah, so something that, you know, I think is a real opportunity. And I think if we look at carbon footprints, and those opportunities are about the same for woodland, hedgerow, and my favourite, obviously, soils, in terms of all of them are real opportunities for farmers. Though often I don't say to farmers, well, you must focus on soil storage of carbon. I talk about improving soil organic matter for a whole range of other reasons. Is that sort of soil organic matter for soil carbon a real focus on farms, or is it more the broader thinking about soil health?
Soil carbon and soil organic matter are intrinsically linked. If you build soil carbon, you might be increasing your applications of organic matter, which in turn, you're including more nutrients, which therefore makes the soil more resilient in relying on perhaps man-made fertilisers, also resilience in terms of water storage, and the benefits of increasing soil organic matter, it just sits at carbon.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing to flag there, and not something we're going to talk about today, is when we're talking about that, we're really talking about those mineral soils, those soils that are mostly sand, silt and clay. If we start to get onto lowland peat soils, and there's a separate podcast Chris Evans of UKCH did with me on that, actually the challenges there are very different. The fossil carbon that was stored in those soils over the last 10,000 years, it really does make the carbon cycle quite different, and we do need to look at those soils differently. But I think for most farmers, with those medium, light, heavy, those kind of soils that we talk about, dominated by those mineral particles, this focus on organic matter is around also about building structure and resilience and just making them easier to manage in the future and building real yield resilience into the system. Let me just ask you the $1,000 question. Do you think improving soil health improves the bottom line of the farm, Kieran?
Long term, definitely.
It's a really hard question to answer, but I think I certainly would think that that's the case. But when farmers challenge me to demonstrate it in practice, it's a really tricky thing to work out because it's lots of little solutions, isn't it, coming together. So if you had to finish by giving your client, they want a couple of top tips, Kieran, on what they should do if they want to focus on reducing greenhouse gas emissions from their arable systems, what's your take-home message? What would you do?
I think the first port of call is to know where you currently stand now. So undertake a farm carbon assessment, and then that will allow you to make data-driven decisions on how you are to reduce your greenhouse gas emissions. Cool. But it's really important to get that done first.
A farmer might challenge us, and again, we've got some podcasts thinking about different or carbon footprinting and how it works. A farmer might come back and challenge us, but they'll give me different answers, Kieran. That is an issue if we want to sell carbon or do anything with it. Is it an issue if we're just thinking about reducing emissions? What would your recommendation be?
It's a management tool, and what it will do is provide you with outcomes that you can look at to make those data-driven decisions. You know, it will identify areas of high emissions or low emissions or even sequestering. And ultimately, if the number is 500 or 5,000, if it's high, it's high. If it's low, it's low. And that's the data that you should be looking at.
I'm going to leave you alone. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon. That's been really brilliant. If anyone wants to follow up, Kieran is one of the advisors from Savills who's working with us on the project overall. And I guess especially for people in the Cotswolds, they can invite you on to farm to take this further forward. And in other areas, there'll be other Savills consultants who are able to do that too.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.